And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday, October 21st. Currently, we've got 35 degrees here in Old Town Park City and 35 degrees in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the EBC Forecast Center, we've got meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Good morning, Wasatch back. Yeah, we've got a pretty gorgeous day in store for much of the state. Cold, of course, temperatures this morning per usual. It's that time of year, but should warm up nicely into the afternoon. We're actually back to above average highs. 61 is expected in Park City. A few high in the sky clouds, otherwise mostly sunshine. Low 60s to mid 60s across much of the Wasatch back. 65 in Heber. In fact, overnight lows will be in the 30s again. Upper 30s for Park City, about 38. Low 30s for Heber into Tuesday. Temperatures near the same. We are going to warm up a little bit through midweek. We have a dry front that's going to sweep through Wednesday night into Thursday. So we should climb to about 67 by Wednesday. Still staying sunny. The storm system passing north of us moves through overnight. So we'll continue to see mostly sunny skies into Thursday as it clears out. Temperatures will be near 40 degrees for overnight lows. We drop to 61 on Thursday and then bounce back to the mid-60s Friday and stay there into the weekend with more sunshine. Looking like we could see another storm system early next week, but for now this week looks just nice and quiet with more slightly above average temperatures. Heber looking at temperatures in the low 70s through Wednesday, dropping to 67 on Thursday behind that dry front, and then we're back to 70 degrees Friday, Saturday, and Sunday upper 60s for Heber as well. So gorgeous weather across the board.
So the folks there at the Yellow Lake Fire looking for more rain and snow, but maybe not till next week, huh?
Maybe not. At least the temperatures aren't too bad, and we don't have a lot of wind either. So there'll still be some decent firefighting conditions to play with in the meantime.
All right, Nate. Yeah. Thank you. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Economic Development Director Jeff Jones. He'll be talking about housing occupancy in Summit County. Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher and Development Director Ashley Lotzko have details on the countdown to Jan's Winter Welcome on Saturday and the record-setting amount of scholarships that have been awarded. Finally, TEDx Park City organizers Terry Orr and Barry Nan Rothschild have details on their upcoming event happening October 29th. Well, Park City is moving ahead with a blueprint to revitalize the Main Street area, potentially with parking reductions and a new gondola. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports.
Park City wants to keep Main Street a tourist destination, especially as ritzy new developments like Deer Valley East Village threaten to steal customers away from the historic district. Earlier this year, Park City launched a committee to develop a Main Street area plan, which seeks to establish a vision for the future of the neighborhood. The committee has discussed several transformational concepts, including parking reductions on Main Street, a new gondola that connects with Deer Valley Snow Park base, and significant commercial development along Sweet Alley. The ideas are scheduled to be presented at a public open house next month, and the City Council could consider adopting the plan by the end of this year. Councilmember Ryan Dickey sits on the committee evaluating the plan.
It's not any specific project. It's not a shovel in the ground. It's council saying, yes, this is the future vision. This is what we want Old Town to be. This is the experience that we want in Old Town. And then the next step going into next year is how do we actually go do it?
Part of the discussions have included talks of building a gondola between the Brew Pub lot at the top of Main Street and Deer Valley Snow Park base. Dickey emphasized that the committee has not evaluated whether a gondola connection is actually feasible. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, at the recent Summit County Council retreat, Summit County Economic Development Director Jeffrey Jones presented a housing profile report that he prepared. He joins me now in studio to share some of those findings and highlights of that report. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Leslie.
So maybe start by telling us what you set out to do with the report.
The purpose of the report was to summarize for the council with regards to housing production, where we've come from, and what our population projections and what our employment projections lead to with regards to future housing needs. With regards to housing policy, we usually convert everything to households. And so that was my initial goal, was to say, okay, if we have population projections of X, this is how many households that will translate into. If we have employment at X, this is how many households that will lead to.
Yeah, so you did look at those housing units in the county, and including Park City, it sounds like, as well.
Well, I used the county as the overall number. I didn't specifically look at individual cities, with the exception of what has been produced this last year.
Okay, and so looking at the report, what I saw was that we have almost 27,000 housing units in the county. 38% of them are vacant?
That is correct.
All right. So the 62% that are occupied, 50% by the owner, and then the others, what, are long-term rentals?
Yes. I think the number was around 12.5% were long-term rentals. And that trend had actually been a little higher when we looked at that number from, say, 2020 to, say, 2022, 23. It was actually trending upward, and then that number trended back down again for the estimate for 2024.
All right, so about 2,000 of those 27,000 are deed restricted, and that's actually built, entitled, or under construction. Right, so not necessarily 2,000 yet. 950 in Park City, 1,100 of those in Summit County, but it sounds like that's still not enough, huh?
Well, when we look at past housing needs assessments, then most of the housing needs assessments showed that we had a shortfall of between 1,000 and 1,200 units. And then the assessments also had a projected need going forward. And so those numbers that you mentioned, the 2,000, those have obviously made a big dent, and they play an important role in our community. But when you're growing and adding jobs at the rate that we're adding jobs in, being over 1,000 per year, and we historically had stronger population growth, then it's hard to keep up. And it's particularly hard to keep up with those that are on the lower income tier, being primarily households that earn less than 30% of the county's area median income.
Yeah, so that 30% of the area median income translates to how much money?
I'd have to 40? Go back and, okay, and look at my specific chart on that.
Okay, and I know I have it written somewhere. Maybe I'll come to it here. But I guess, so we're growing, you say, 1,000 new jobs every year. What are we looking at then in terms of population? Because it seems to me that we're actually losing people.
Yeah, so one of the things that you see often in high-cost markets are that population starts to mature and your age cohort changes. Those that are more established financially are those that can move into the area. And I think that's what we've seen. And so the projections going forward through the next 10 years, memory serves me correctly, the annual growth rate was only 0.4% in my calculation. I know that like a year ago, we were projecting that at 1%, but then we had two consecutive years of population loss in the county in a row, and that starts to crowd itself into the model. And our model, we use a Lightcast model, what's Lightcast developer model, and that weights current years with a greater weight than, say, past performance. And so that's why you saw the projection move from 1% to 0.4%. And then we also use another application called ESRI Business Analyst, and that projection is at 0.6%. And so I saw recently that Kim Gardner just released some new 10-year short-term projections, and they're still projecting the 1%, but they're also projecting close to 2% for household growth.
That was something that kind of stuck out to me, was that when you look at the family households, which basically represent about 75% of the units, the biggest family size is two. I mean, and that's at like 35% of all of those units, and it goes way down from there. In non-family households, single occupancy represents about 20% of the units, and again, it goes way down from there when they have three or four people in there. I guess given that, what should developers know? I mean, just start building two-bedroom apartments?
Well, I think that that's already sort of the common apartment size. That's probably the most dominant. But I think that the shift in demographics that you're seeing is not just here, but across the country, where we've seen declining fertility rates, where we've seen, particularly areas where you have larger concentrations of senior populations, age 65 and above, you have smaller households. And because of that, this non-family household, single-person household, is actually growing at a very quick rate across the country and also within Summit County as well.
Yeah, so that's good information for builders to know, right?
I think that it's important information to know. It's also, I think, presents an opportunity for people to say, do we just want to accommodate that particular cohort, or do we also want to focus on retaining, younger families and smaller families as well within our marketplace?
All right. Well, jump to that in a little bit, though. But back in 2010, I think it was you that had done a report that recommended that Summit County, through its housing policies, mandate that one out of every four units should be low to very low income households. And that would be, at that time, below 50% of AMI. That's about $47,000 today. So did that happen? Was that policy implemented?
I don't believe so.
Okay. And then in 2017, you saw the need for another 1,300 units below the 80% AMI between 2018 and 2025. So did we do that?
No.
No. So has the situation gotten any better, I guess?
Well, I think that that's really a policy question that's probably best directed to the elected officials. But obviously, challenges of housing are very complex. And part of it is, like, if you were to offer me a job today and say, Jeff, we have a job for you at KPCW, how would you like to come and work here? And I say yes. That happens in 5 minutes. But to build a house or build an apartment, the time frame it takes to build that unit is much, much longer. And so most communities are always in some phase of catch up in order to accommodate that.
Yeah. So the fact that we don't have the housing for people who are working here, that means that they're coming in from someplace else.
They are.
And so that's what we get to blame the traffic on, right?
That's really where the majority of our traffic is coming from, is from our inbound and outbound commuters.
Yeah, so it's not, I mean, when people say, oh, we're growing, well, your numbers say, no, we're not, but the number of people that we need to make the economy work is.
That is correct.
All right. So what's that message then, again, as people, as our decision makers go forward?
Well, I think the council, took a good first step at our retreat at grinding through the information. And I think that's where everybody has to start and say, okay, what do all of these things mean? And there's going to be areas where we don't fully understand all the time. For example, the change in households. Mm-hmm. We saw I think it was in 2022, we saw population decline modestly, but we saw households, we lost almost 1,000 households. So that's a big number. And so understanding, well, what was the cause of that? Was that COVID holdover and everybody left? Was it those units were moved into the short-term rental pool and are no longer available for long-term renters? Those are some outstanding questions, I think, that, need to be answered or should at least be further researched. And then the following year, conversely, we also lost more population, but we gained households back. Mm. And that sort of points to that single-person household where we lose potentially, let's say we lost three families of four, that would be three households, but then we had 10 single-person households move in. So that's why the difference is between the two.
Yeah, and what I guess also kind of stuck out for me is the fact that we've got our workforce. I mean, it's just we don't have the numbers of people who can work to maintain our tourism economy. So where are we going to get those people?
That is, I think that's the golden question. And, you know, who's going to do the work? And one of the things that I put in my presentation is I divided our population up historically between what we consider to be working age population, being 16 to 64, and dependent age population between 0 and 14 and 65 and above. And if you look at that particular slide, you can see that our working age population used to exceed our dependent age population. That has now changed, and we have more people in the dependent age population, which means we have less workers, but we also have, as we have more dependent age population, more of a consumer of services than a producer of services over time. And so you have two of these things kind of happening at the same time: lack of workers and then more demand for service.
Yeah, and I don't know, did you get into the issue of childcare? I mean, if the workers can't find somebody to take care of their children, I mean, they're not going to work.
We didn't specifically get into childcare, but that was one cohort, the five and below, or I believe that was the age cohort, where we actually saw gains in. It's when they get to be school age. And I think that's sort of the common thing, is like people will have a child and they're crammed into a small little place and they go, this is not enough room here. We've got to try to, you know, find a place that for our family. And if that isn't available at an affordable price point, then those households leave. And I think you can see through the data that was in the presentation that the majority of our population losses are through the school age cohorts. And that's kind of happening statewide. There was a story in the Salt Lake Tribune this last week that talked about how there was a significant or a record drop in school enrollment from K through 12 across all of Utah.
And what I did see in the report, that childcare expenses have more than doubled in the last decade, yet wages have remained stagnant, and taxpayers already clamoring about high taxes. And it's like, and they're questioning why the county's in the affordable housing business and the childcare business. So what's the answer here?
Well, I think that, you know, that goes specifically to, you know, what your priorities are. And, you know, they say that the budget documents are really where the priorities of each individual city or county rest. And I think with that, if you want to continue to build your local economy or maintain a healthy economy, which we have, we're blessed that way, then there are steps you have to take in order to ensure that you have a viable workforce and that you have support infrastructure for those employees.
So, but do we run into the same problem, right, as we build the houses for the community what we want to create, right, with young families, you know, and make sure that our teachers and firefighters and hospital workers are living in our community? Then they stay around and they get older, and then, right?
Well,
I mean, because that's what we're seeing with the older people.
There's
here.
Always going to be some life cycle issues. I think those are the questions that everyone has to kind of wrestle with. And there's some examples out there, like, you know, if you look in other countries and you look at Japan, with very mature population, and how has that impacted their economy? What can we learn from those markets? There's also going to be means that there's, as we age, there's going to be new entrepreneur opportunities for people to serve that population as well.
All right. So I guess anything stand out for you, I mean, after making this presentation?
I think the biggest thing that stands out to me is that this is a complex problem without an easy solution. And it takes, I think, contributions from the nonprofit sector, the government, private business. Everyone has to be engaged. And then we all have a responsibility to make sure that we're putting forward the best information possible so that we can make decisions, not from an ideology standpoint, but from the standpoint that's just grounded in fact and reality and what our needs are.
Okay, I'm gonna leave it at that.
Jeff, thank you.
Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome.
That's Summit County Economic Development Director Jeff Jones. Well, the countdown to the 44th annual Jan's Winter Welcome is underway with less than a week to purchase opportunity. Drawing tickets to benefit youth sports. In the studio with an update, I have Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher along with Development Director Ashley Glasgow. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Ashley, let's start with you. You all set for Winter Welcome?
Yes, we are getting there. We are very excited to have the 44th annual Jan's Winter Welcome this Saturday, October 26th, up at Stein Erickson Lodge.
So is it sold out or...?
We are sold out. We've been sold out for some time. But we do have a wait list. And actually, I encourage people to reach out to me directly. I'm at ashley@ysausa.org. And please add your name to the wait list. We have some last minute changes. Frequently, people can't come. So there is a good chance if you're on the wait list that you might get a seat. So please do reach out.
Okay. So would that mean that people forfeit their ticket or that they can actually sell it to somebody on the wait list?
No, that's all handled through us. Okay. So if somebody's ill or if something came up last minute, we do have some last minute changes. So I'm happy to take someone's name and keep in touch with them if there is an open ticket that comes available.
Okay, that's Ashley with an E.
A-S-H-L-E-Y.
Okay, so it sounds like even if people don't attend, there are still ways, a couple of ways to participate. An online auction opening Wednesday?
Yes. So our online auction opens this Wednesday. We're really excited about all the items that we have this year. There are trips, there are sporting goods, restaurants, and all of the proceeds from the online auction benefit our 7 local winter sports clubs and the YSA after school programs.
Yeah. Any idea how many of the online auction items that you have?
Oh boy, we'll have over 500 items.
Okay. So is that kind of replacing the silent auction that happens at the event?
So it's actually the same thing. I mean, the online auction, the whole auction is online. So it'll launch on Wednesday, and then we will have the majority of the items displayed up at Stein's on Saturday night. But you do not need to be present at Jan's Winter Welcome to participate in the online auction. So please keep an eye out for that. It'll be live on our website, ysausa.org, on Wednesday.
All right. And then people will need their phones then to bid.
Correct. Yes. If you're attending, please come with a well-charged phone. We will, we'll have bid assisters there, but it is all online for the event as well.
All right. And people can also purchase opportunity drawing tickets. How would they do that?
Yes, we're very excited about the package we have this year. You can also buy those tickets on our website, ysausa.org. The package this year is a great trip to Belize. It's a week-long stay in a brand new 5-bedroom, 6-bath, oceanfront house with a pool. It also includes a $4,000 flight credit, a few nights with a private chef, daily housekeeping. It's a great package because it can be really used for a family or for a reunion vacation with some best friends. There are a lot of different ways to enjoy this package this year.
All right. And people do have, I believe, the opportunity to decide where they want that drawing money to go?
Yes, you can assign it to an athlete in one of our partner clubs. So that money, just like the silent auction, goes directly to the clubs. So whatever the clubs or athletes in those clubs bring in goes directly back to them. Last year, we helped our partner teams raise over $300,000 through the silent auction and through these opportunity drawing tickets. And then another $200,000 was raised for our scholarship program through the Stein Erickson Endowment. So we're really excited about those numbers from last year and hope to top them this year.
Wow, that's impressive. All right, Emily, well, let's shift to the announcement that you have some really good news here, that you have set a record of handling out scholarships this fall.
Yeah, so the Stein Erickson Endowment, that has been slowly growing, and through our efforts at Jan Sprinter Welcome Paddle Raise, that's been growing. So we're able to award more money. So this fall, we awarded $144,800 in scholarships to support local winter sport athletes. That's a 23% increase over last year. And then this spring, we hope to add an additional $50,000 in scholarship to cover postseason competition, national training camps, things that maybe weren't planned for by the athletes, but they can't necessarily afford to attend. All of our scholarships through the Stein Erickson Endowment are need-based. So excited to support those athletes and be able to award more money.
Yeah, so is the more money happening as a result of just the stock market, you know, setting records? I mean, that you're seeing additional dividends through the endowment?
Yeah, it's a combination of we've had great success at the paddle raise at Chance Winner Welcome, and the stock market has done great. We have incredible board members, incredible members of our investment committee that have done a great job. We actively manage our endowment, so we have seen that grow, and it just means we can give away more money, which is my favorite part.
Yeah, so the fact that you have more money means that you're making more scholarships as well, so it's both money and in terms of the number of awards you're making, huh?
Yes, correct. Yeah. Yep.
Okay, and how many kids do you help?
I believe this last round in the fall, I think it was 98 scholarships that we awarded. So exciting to be able to, yeah, help those athletes. And this really is scholarship money that we're providing to athletes that if they didn't get this money, they would not be able to participate. So it really makes a difference in the athletes' lives and the families' lives.
All right. And is that money available then for those after-school programs?
So that's actually separate. Mm-hmm. So we have two separate pots of money. We have our Stein Erickson Endowment, and that is for athletes in those seven winter clubs. Every dollar that we raise for that goes back to those athletes at 100%. We don't take anything out of that. That goes straight to those athlete scholarships. And then we have the Jim Gaddis Endowment Fund that helps support our after-school programs for scholarships, transportation, gear, those pieces as well.
Okay, and how is that endowment funded?
Yes, that endowment has been growing as well. We've had some great momentum with donors, and again, our investment committee just does a great job with managing those endowments.
Okay, so for those after-school programs, it sounds like you've got registration open for your popular outdoor programs.
Yeah. We are asked year-round when our winter programs are going to open, so I want to let everybody know that registration is open for all of our ski and snowboard programs. So learn to ski, learn to snowboard, cross-country skiing, ski jumping, freestyle, park and pipe. There's really options for everybody across four different school districts. You can register at ysausa.org. We had nearly 900 students participate in our snow programs last year. So check those out. Registration is open, and make sure that you register soon.
Yeah, they do sell out, yeah?
Some sell out, mm-hmm. Some don't. It's definitely a mixture. Some of the programs with smaller sizes sell out really quickly, and some that have a bigger capacity have openings right up until the deadline.
All right, and again, even if somebody may not have the funding or the money to participate, you'll help them out?
Yeah, so programs are accessible to all financial backgrounds. We don't run programs for just a specific part of our community. We run programs for everyone in the community. They're affordable. We provide gear and clothing when needed. There's scholarships. There's discounts. So we have a sibling discount. We have a teacher discount. We have a first responder discount. We try to ensure all kids can participate. We have for students that are in free and reduced lunch, they pay just a small commitment fee. And then students that their families make less than $120,000 annually. They also get a discount, so they pay about half, and then we have our just regular fees. So try to make it accessible to everyone.
Yeah, I mean, what's the normal fee for the program?
Well, gosh, they really vary. It depends on where they're going, how they're going, how often. So our Learn to Ski program is probably the bread and butter. It's 5 weeks. If you don't have a pass, I believe it's $235 for 5 weeks. That's lift ticket, lesson, and transportation. Can't beat that. If you are on the free and reduced lunch program for 5 weeks, we also provide proper clothing and gear, helmets, goggles, skis, snow pants, gloves, you name it. And it's just a $50 commitment fee, so $10 a week. And then for that tier two scholarship, it's just half of that.
All right. And you also rely on a lot of volunteers to run these after-school programs. Who are you looking for?
Absolutely. We could not run all of our programs without our dedicated volunteers. They contribute time, expertise. They make the programs possible. We do have a formal volunteer program that requires a background check. It's really fast, easy to do. We will cover that, or you can cover the cost of that. It's up to you. But if you go to ysausa.org, you can fill out an application and then become one of our volunteers. For our volunteers for our Learn to Ski program, they will go to the school, they'll help the kids put on their mittens, zip up jackets, get them on the bus, get them to the mountain. Once the students are connected with their instructor, we do provide a lift ticket, so you get to ski for free during that lesson time, which is about 2.5 hours. And at the end of the lesson, you'll meet back up with the kids, get them back on the bus, and get them back to school. So there is a little incentive in there that you can get some free skiing if you volunteer with us.
Yeah, any idea how many volunteers you have?
I don't have that number off the top of my head, but I know it's in the hundreds.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Anything else?
I think just again, Jan's Winter Welcome is this Saturday. Our online auction will go live on Wednesday. It's ysausa.org. That is a great way for everybody in the community to participate. You can go on there. There's hundreds of items. You can do your Christmas shopping. You can find gear. You can find trips. You can find clothing. Pretty much your favorite restaurant, your favorite salon, your favorite place in town has a gift certificate in there. So you can sort by your favorite team. So you can support teams that you want. You can just participate in all different ways, but that's a great way to support the teams from your couch at home if that's how you choose to do it.
Okay. Emily, Ashley, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Leslie.
TEDx Park City returns this month, and in the studio to tell us what to expect, I have the organizers, Terry Orr, along with Barry Nan Rothschild. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Terry, maybe start with you. What is TEDx Park City?
TEDx Park City is, we were one of the first 100 licenses to pop up way back in 2007. And it was an outgrowth of folks who attended TED who convinced the big TED community that we could and should do this in a smaller version in our own communities since everyone can't go to TED.
All right, so you're one of how many then that have this authorization to do that?
We were one of the first 100. There's now more than 4,000 globally.
Okay, and how is it that you became a permit holder? Is that what it is, a permit holder?
You know, I don't know that they actually have language for it, but yeah. So far, I haven't messed it up enough that they've taken it away, I guess is, you know, the best way to say it. But I've been attending TED for a long time. And they wipe the slate clean every year, so if you, you may not get invited back. So I've been fortunate to been attending TED events globally and mostly in Vancouver.
Wow. All right, so you've been doing this TEDx Park City event for about 18 years. I mean, why?
Because when I attended TED, it was so wonderfully overwhelming to me to be exposed. I'm someone who didn't get to finish college, and to be exposed to people with big ideas, and to have a refresher course every year of what was new about the environment, or what was new about typefaces, or what was new in the world of science, and great people from the world of entertainment. So it's a bombardment of senses, and I thought, well, that just fits with Park City.
Yeah. So how long has it been since you put the last one on?
You know, the last one was in 2022, and it was not a public event. It was a small event after the election, and there were so many women who had been elected in this area that we brought them together, and we did a little event at the Church of All Good Things here in Park City.
Okay. So, Barry Nan, have you been to one of these global TED?
I have not been to a global TED conference. I have attended... we've done our TED Live events where we're streaming directly from, say, TED Women as one example. And it is exhilarating to be able even just to stream. That is an amazing thing because you're watching it still in community with other people. You're reacting to it and you don't know what's going to come next. And sometimes something comes that flattens you. And then, you know, a moment later, you're laughing at, you know, some very human, wonderful moment. So it's really inspiring to be able to do that, to be able to have those events in our own community and look at our world a little differently.
Okay. So the event's going to be October 29th at the Park City Eccles Theater there. What time?
The doors will open at 5:30. The event will start early at 6. We're going to try and give... the people there an immersion experience not unlike TED. So we will have a break with Red Banjo Pizza and some beverages, and then we will go back in for the second session. So it will be talk after talk after talk, and when I say talk, some of those are musical performances, some of them are visual things that happen, but it will be a lot of community that can happen in that tight space because we're limiting it to 300 people.
Oh, okay. And is it all local people that
No.
are presenting?
No, none of this is local. This is entirely from this past year's TED conference. So most of those talks are not up yet, and they're not out in the universe.
All right, so what people will see then is them projected onto a screen then?
Yes.
As if they were sitting there.
Which is what we see when we're at TED. We see the speaker on the stage, but the big screen behind is showing the whole audience what's going on.
Ah, okay. So you expect it to last till when? 6 to, you know, doors open at 5:30?
Does probably 9? About 9, okay. Yeah. We'll probably wrap up around 9.
We want the break to be sufficient so that you can, you know, clear your head for a second and get a bite.
All right, so is it TED that decides what you can use, or do you come up with kind of your own unique Park City program?
We are able to, with this license, we are able to curate what we want. So I could go backwards in the archives if I thought it was important to re-show Sir Ken Robinson speaking or some other great talk, but most of this 99% is going to be new content.
All right, from just
this past
Yeah, 2024. So who are you going to feature? Barry Nan, want to talk about some of those?
Yeah, we have a really cool eclectic lineup. And I'm only going to tell you a few of them because I feel like part of the joy of being in that room is the surprise. But I will tell you that we're going to hear from the person who designed the Sphere in Las Vegas for U2. So that's going to be a big deal, I think. A lot of people in town have been to see it, and I think people will want to get that inside scoop. I think it'll be really exciting to watch. We have a speaker talking about rewilding South America, which is a movement around, you know, preserving the ecosystem, rebuilding the ecosystem. So I think that'll be something we'll get to learn a lot about in that moment. And I think there's one called How to Be a Better Human. And I'm really excited to see that one. I haven't seen all of them. I like to leave a little bit surprised, too. So sometimes I will say to Terry, I don't want to know.
So is that Arthur Brooks? Who's doing that?
That is Chris Duffy.
Okay. So there is a ticket, right?
There is a ticket.
300 tickets.
We have 300 tickets only, and they are $35. They are available at our website, TEDxParkCityUT.org, and they are, you know, they're only as good as 300, so you should get them fast.
And we're going to create a space within that big space so that you won't be all spread out. We want you to be in community together. We want you to talk to your neighbors. That's kind of the wow of what happens with any luck.
All right. Now, this is just kind of one of the events that you have done over the years. As you mentioned, you've got TEDx Youth. Are you still doing that?
Yes, we'll be doing that in May. And again, we haven't done it for years. We had a break. We were under the umbrella of TEDx San Diego as a nonprofit because we didn't feel the need to develop another nonprofit. And they disbanded in the form they were in. So we were kind of in a space there for a while. And we are now under the umbrella, we are so happy, with the Utah Film Center. And they are serving as our 501c3, with thanks to Frank Bennett and, of course, Geraldine Dreyfuss.
All right. And then you've got another one that you're planning for December as well?
We're going to do TEDx Women in December. We are trying to find the just right location. I think, Leslie, you've been to some of them, and it has been great when it's been in a hotel space. We've done pop-up spaces, so we're still trying to find the right space for that. And then in May, we will do TEDx Youth, where, of course, we teach kids how to give their own TED Talks.
All right. And the ones that folks will see on the 29th, those are, again, they're like 20 minutes long. Is that what they run?
Not necessarily anymore. That used to be the format, and many of them are less than 20 minutes. Occasionally, there's one that's longer. But they've learned that, you know, if you really have something to say and you can say it in 12 minutes, why stretch it out beyond that?
All right. And it used to be that they couldn't use, like, you know, what do I want to say?
Visuals?
Exactly, yeah. I was going to say, yeah, PowerPoint.
PowerPoints and things like that. And that seems to have evolved over the years as well. I think we've become a much more visual society, and I think that that is something that an organization that has the word design in it is going to note.
Okay. Let's see. Anything else you want to tell us about it then?
You know, we're just excited to have the community come out and enjoy this evening. It's a thrill to be back on stage at the Eccles for this event. And we're really excited about the support we've gotten from the community. We have some amazing sponsors ranging from the Chamber Bureau in Park City to Morgan Stanley, Done to Your Taste, Park City Summit County Arts, things like that. And of course, Red Banjo.
Okay. Can you go after local, like rap tax grants or, you know, cultural grants?
You know, we never have in the past. It's something to look into. We're such a hybrid that it's worth looking again for sure.
Okay. All right. Ted, again, TEDx Park City happening October 29th. Doors open at 5:30 there at the Park City Eccles Center. People can get tickets at tedxparkcity.org.
TEDxParkCityUT.org.
Just that extra little UT.
Okay, yeah. Got it. All right, ladies, thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thanks so much. We look forward to seeing you there.
That's Terry Orr and Barry Nunn Rothschild. Well, as membership grows, the Park City Senior Center plans to increase its services in the coming years. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more about that.
The Park City Senior Center now has over 600 members, an increase of 57% from just 2 years ago. Prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, the Senior Center had around 70 members. During an annual update to the Park City Council, board member Francie McNally said they plan to expand services for the growing membership, but they're running out of space.
Until you visit our current facility on lunch days or program days, you have no idea of how inadequate our current facility is.
Park City Manager Matt Dias says the city is evaluating proposals to redevelop the Senior Center site on Woodside Avenue, just north of the Park City Library. Along with an expanded program area, Dias said the new site could also include housing. The Senior Center board expects membership to continue to increase. The center currently operates 4 days a week, but President Liz Novak hopes to be open 5 days a week by 2026. Novak also said they want to increase the number of meals served each week. Park City Councilmember Jeremy Rubel said it's on the city to speed up discussions.
There's certainly a need, probably a need pretty quickly here for a new center to meet all these great programs you have.
Dias said collaboration with Summit County, which funds the center's operations, will be critical. Rubel suggested the new senior center be discussed at the upcoming joint meeting of Park City and Summit County elected officials on October 28th. The agenda for that meeting has not yet been published. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
A teacher at Midway Elementary is facing felony charges after allegedly striking a child with disabilities in the face. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more on that.
Angela Rose George, a special education teacher in Wasatch County School District, is accused of hitting the first grade student in the face back in March. Wasatch County prosecutors have since charged her with one felony count of abuse or neglect of a disabled child. According to an affidavit from a Wasatch County Sheriff's deputy, the abuse allegedly occurred at Midway Elementary on Thursday, March 28th. A first grade student told a classroom aide George smacked him above the eye. The aide took the child to the school nurse, who photographed the injury. In an interview with KBCW, the student's mother said her son had a big welt around his eye when she picked him up from school. She's asked to remain anonymous to protect her son's privacy. The school nurse and classroom aide told the mother the school was looking into the situation. The following Monday, however, the school's principal called to tell the family George was returning to the classroom. The principal told the boy's mother it was a child's word against an adult's. The boy's parents called a lawyer, who sent a letter April 1st asking the district to investigate more thoroughly. The same day, Midway Elementary's principal contacted the Wasatch County Sheriff's Office about the incident. Wasatch County School District declined KPCW's request for comment on the allegations, citing the ongoing investigation. Several classroom aides told the deputy George is often aggressive and impatient with her students. According to the affidavit, one aide said she and others had previously shared concerns about George's behavior with the school's principal. The family's lawyer, Joshua Jukes, confirmed their accounts.
After this all occurred, all this stuff started coming out of the woodwork. A lot of other parents saying, hey, my kid had a very similar experience. Hey, I went and complained to the principal about this lady a month ago. And we suddenly realized that this was a pattern of behavior that perhaps had been ignored or brushed aside. And we were at the point where that just couldn't happen anymore.
He says the boy's parents want to ensure students with disabilities in the district have safe classrooms. The child's mother says the alleged incident felt like a betrayal of trust, especially in a special education classroom. Jukes says the alleged incident highlights the need for special education faculty to have adequate training and support. George has been on paid administrative leave since April. Her next 4th District Court appearance is scheduled for October 30th. Resources about child abuse and how to report it are available at kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And October is National Book Month, and local libraries are marking that occasion with the first regional Wasatchback Book Festival. Beginning today, local readers can participate in a host of book-themed events. The regional festival is the local extension of the annual Utah Humanities Book Festival, which has celebrated literature with statewide events for nearly 3 decades. This year, the Summit County, Wasatch County, and Park City Libraries are partnering with Utah Humanities to host the regional event. The celebration of books and reading runs from October 21st to 27th, and each library will offer opportunities to meet local authors, attend author lectures and book signings, and other literary-themed events. The first event is again today at the Jim Santee Auditorium. Local author Mike Finkel will discuss his New York Times best-selling book, The Art Thief, a true story of love, crime, and a dangerous obsession. It follows a master thief who stole art from museums and cathedrals all over Europe, not for money, but for passion. Park City librarian Andrea Herrick-Wars is especially excited for the library's first Mystery in the Stacks event. This is an interactive film noir-themed experience.
I hope everyone will get involved with this. We are closing the library. We are doing a whodunit interactive theater event that night.
The proceeds will support Friends of the Park City Library. On Saturday morning, the Park City Library will give locals the chance to share a line from their favorite book and enjoy some pie.
Sometimes I read a line and I'm just like, whoa, that was so beautiful. I close the book and I'm just stunned.
You can find out more online at kpcw.org for a full list of the Wasatch Book Festival events, including an appearance by used to live in Park City, author Pam Houston. And also a reminder that Heber City residents are invited to an open house today to learn more about the city's vision for revitalizing downtown. The open house will be held at City Park. A tent will be set up with 5 stations where locals can learn more about the band shell currently under construction, ideas for the park's future, and the overall envisioned Central Heber plan. City leaders will also explain how tax increment funding will be invested in downtown and share the concept for a pedestrian corridor parallel to Main Street. City Manager Matt Brower says the event is meant to help answer common questions about downtown Heber's future.
All of these were strategically picked based upon interest we've received from the community wanting to know more about them, interest or questions or even stated concerns.
City leaders and planning experts will be present to talk about details with community members and to answer any questions. Two open house sessions are planned for today, first from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., and then later on tonight, 6 to 7:30 p.m.